Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
A little bit of a different political commentary this week. We've got news director Lillian Hanley. Kia ora, Lil. How are you?
Good morning. I'm actually getting a bit of a headache.
Oh, no.
But it's okay.
It's all right. It's a busy day. We're talking about Ihu Matau and what's happening out there at the moment. Do you want to give us
I'm going to start by saying, one, I'm not an official political commentator, and two, I'm not any sort of official spokesperson for Ihu Matau. I'm not an expert on what is going on, but obviously things are kicking off after about 6 years of a movement, really. Which has certainly ramped up in the past kind of 2-3 years when people actually started living in the area designated to them. So I guess...
What's the backstory here, I guess? Because there's a lot of people who don't really know what's going on.
And a point has been made actually on Twitter that there are lots of people that aren't aware of what's going on and that these conversations have been had and these historical contexts provided and those sorts of things for years and years now. So there's a question of also why is it that we don't know about this? And it is because, I mean, it is a really, it's a complicated story and it isn't black and white for sure. Mm-hmm. There are black and white issues to it, which I'll get to, but it is a complicated story and it makes it easier to sort of dismiss or say, you know, they're just protesting something, which is, you know, it makes it easier to dismiss when you're not really understanding the full story. So
yep.
I do want to point out that there is a really actually great piece by Leonie Hayden on New Zealand Geographic, which goes into quite a bit of detail on the history, but also the kind of contentions more recently. So I would just actually recommend reading that. But it does provide in that piece that, it goes right from the start. So Te Waiohua is the iwi in that area and they were the first iwi of Tāmaki, and they actually provided a lot of food for all of Tāmaki, and I think Vincent O'Malley is in saying that people would have really struggled, possibly starved, had it not been for this iwi, because they had this incredibly functioning market garden, basically, where and the land, because it was volcanic rock, obviously, but also access to the water and all of these things, the way that they designed it, it just worked incredibly. So anyway, this is their area, this is their Tūranga Waiwai, I suppose you can say. And then fast forward a bit to 1863, Crown officials came onto the land demanding that they pledge allegiance to the Queen. And this iwi group had already supported the Kingitanga in Waikato, so they refused to refused to pledge allegiance to the Queen. And the land was confiscated as a punishment and given to British settlers. And one of those families, the Wallace family, was given land then, and they remain. They were the title holder who sold to Fletcher Construction.
So that went down the line of family for
exactly.
them, right?
And so that's been, so they've been displaced from their land. So 1863, they were displaced. Some returned around 1890, and they managed to get some of the land back, a very small portion of that,
right.
Because through a compensation court.
The Wallace family had like one house and like not much
was many families, and then it ended up later down the track. So there is a small kind of Māori community there, but in that time, and then later down the track, the Wallace family have a certain amount of an area, and they took it to the Environmental Court, but.
The Wallace family.
Yeah, arguing that they, if there was to be a construction or a housing area or something, then they would lose their production, like means of production. It was like a thing for money for them,
right?
To my understanding. Anyway, so sort of fast forwarding, and you've got a housing crisis in Auckland, right? So there's this bit of land, you know, very far away, and in the sense that, I want to say actually that since that time, a number of environmental issues occurred over the past sort of 100, 200 years.
Right.
In that there was like sewage issues, there was all of these things that kind of happened to the land, which had Māori people been there would not have, that's against tikanga, basically. It was against the way that they would treat land is not that. And there was quite a big One that happened, I think, 2012. That's all even earlier, possibly. But they wanted to extend the airport runway, and the iwi from the area opposed that because it would go directly over the burial ground of their ancestors. And one of the people, so Te Warena Taua was quite. He was at the forefront of that opposition,
yep.
And it did occur that when they did put the runway down, they found 90 skeletons, basically. So there's not really been the respect there for that whenua from the beginning. And I
was just going to say, for the texter who's just asked what the context is, we're talking about Ihu Matau. As people know, there's a bit of a situation unfolding as we speak there at the moment. So Lillian's just giving us a bit of a pocket history of how we've got to where we are.
Very pocket history. And I recommend just going and Googling. There's so much information out there because it's a long story as well, because this case has been to the UN. So we're talking like this a lot of time and energy going into this, and I don't want to do it the
injustice.
So you've got Te Warena Taua. I'm saying his name because he's been a forefront of basically trying to support and maintain and protect that land, and now there is this kind of tension between what has been named the Komatua group and a younger group, right? Mm-hmm. So what And where Te Warena comes in is there are now two, there's kind of multiple iwi that are now invested in this area because they do have relationship to it.
Yeah.
But actually it was pointed out by somebody from Te Waiohua that they, Kawerau Maki didn't have anywhere to go, what they say. So they welcomed them into that area. And mm-hmm. so now obviously there are multiple kind of interests in that area and a relationship to that land. So mm-hmm. then you have this elder group who have been opposing, they sort of were trying to fight it, but once the land, so that there's also the issue that it was, the land was turned into by means of the Special Housing Act, basically, which essentially speeds up the process that you would have to go through.
Yeah.
In a normal area, like consultation with the locals or that sort of stuff, it all kind of happens behind doors. There's not much access to actually have a say in that matter, and that's special housing essentially is trying to say, we need houses, let's do this quickly, right? So obviously you can see that there are people who believe in that and mm-hmm. agree with that. Anyway, so there's a group of elders who are opposing certain aspects of it quite early on, and then there was this sort of decision that they weren't going to win necessarily, and so they decided to negotiate with Fletchers, right? So Fletchers ended up owning the land because they bought it off the Wallace family.
Right.
Not sure how much that was for.
I think it was it 40 million?
40 million, I think. That's what I know now.
It is. Fletchers are willing to sell it for that price.
Right. So they've come out saying that they don't actually want it.
Well, no, they're willing to sell it for the price they paid for it.
And let's
remember that
$40 million, somebody looked this up for me last night, is like a very, very minimal percentage of our yearly budget. Anyway, just pointing that out. So what they did is they negotiated with Fletcher to basically allow for a certain area to be kept for that iwi, and they also negotiated that the number of houses that was proposed, I believe it was like 520, they got it down to 480, so that would be less damage, but obviously 480 is still a fairly significant number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're calling them affordable homes, and it's at 75% of sort of market rate, which is still 650,000. Some of the younger group are saying that this is possibly not affordable for the people that Te Warena and that group are arguing for. They're saying that this could mean that a number of Māori families that have grown up away from their Tūranga Waiwai could come back there,
mm-hmm.
but actually, and that's what Seoul is arguing, is that perhaps they wouldn't be able to afford it. So there is this tension between a younger group and an older group, and obviously there's these is painted as like, okay, the elders have said this and so you guys should be listening. But what their argument is that they feel that the elders decided to negotiate too soon, perhaps, and what they could have done was pushed it a little bit more, because that's what they're wanting. This younger group is, I'm referring to Soul Save Our Unique Landscape, and that was started by six cousins from the area and a number of other support people. They are saying that enough is enough, actually, and yep. This is a confiscation of land. So this land was confiscated basically illegally under the treaty, if you're looking at this historically.
Yep.
And what they want is to draw a line, because, and there's a post, actually a sign out there I've seen, it said something about the greater good of Auckland, and it made me think about the way that Māori land is often, or just land in general, because there's so much kind of confiscated land and therefore stolen land, Māori land that has often then become privatised and used in a way that will benefit the rest of Auckland. So then you set up this kind of othering process that yep. It's like, well, Māori are trying to keep it for themselves, and you know, those houses should be there for the rest of Auckland because we need it. And it's like, well, to what extent, how many times do Māori have to be exploited to do that, when actually at no point in history have Māori ever said, we will not manaaki you, we'll not feed you, we'll not, that was what the whole foreshore and seabed argument was about. And people were calling out the government in that sense, because there's been a lot of rhetoric from the Labour Party about supporting Māori rights, and people were calling Jacinda basically to step in and say, actually, we need you to make it an executive call on this matter.
So that's a bit of a pocket history. Thank you, Lillian, for that. Really appreciate that. On how we've kind of got to the context that exists at Ihu Mātou at the moment, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later in the show as well, I would imagine, about what's actually happening on the ground there right now. But thank you for that. If you want some more information on what's happening out there, as Lillian said, Leonie Hayden's got a fantastic piece on National Geographic. There's also a good short thing from RNZ that came up yesterday that gives you a bit of sort of a pocket context as well. So those are good things to check out too. Kia ora, Lil. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
You're